As always, even though the introduction music says two guys gaming, this is one guy reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noobs Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series, I am reading and reacting to Frank Herbert's classic science fiction book, Dune. I got caught in another cycle of non-updates once again, so it's been a while since the last episode that I uploaded, but I do have a plan to get the next three episodes, which will get us through quote unquote book one, and I think most of what we need to watch the movie. So maybe I'll do a movie versus at the end of these three episodes, and then I will continue with the book and pick up with the second chapter of the movie once we get there. I saw that the third movie is also coming out, but I think that covers the next book, so we have a little bit of time before I have to read that one. I do have other plans going forward. I think I rewrote the list of books that I'm going to read going forward, and I will update those in the show notes when I upload this. So, at least the first seven chapters of Dune read like a chess match where we all know who the winner is. I'm not sure 100% if the characters do. I think they have like an inkling of what's going on, but I don't think they really know what's going on like we do. As an aside, I used to play chess a lot when I was younger, if I remember correctly, which I don't remember a lot of my childhood correctly, but if I remember correctly, my father thought that I might be a savant or something with chess, but that never obviously happened since I am simply a math teacher and occasional writer and podcaster on the internet to, I don't know, maybe about 10, 12 of you. Who's out there listening? Let me know. Anyway, a couple of years ago, I found the chess app again, and again, that went to the wayside, but I randomly picked it up a couple months ago, started doing some of the puzzles and the lessons. One of my friends, Craig, he really got into chess, and we've been talking back and forth. He does tournaments with his kid, and I asked Quinn if he wanted to learn how to play chess, so I bought home a chessboard, and we'll probably learn how to play chess together over Christmas break. Stay tuned for that. But the main reason that I bring that up is because how do you maintain the suspense when you've given up most of the plot already? I mean, no spoilers, Frank Herbert, right? I'm going to go back to the traditional format for this particular one. I will read through the chapter summaries, and then afterwards I will give my thoughts on those chapters. Without further ado, this is Dune, Part 1, Chapter 1, Summary. The Atreides family rules over the planet Caladan. House Atreides is one of several important and influential houses that rule the universe under the control of the Padishah Emperor Shaddam Corino IV. Duke Leto Atreides is the head of the House Atreides. His concubine, Lady Jessica, has given him a son named Paul. Lady Jessica is a member of the Bene Gesserit, a secretive intergalactic sisterhood whose members are trained in physical and mental conditioning that grants them near superhuman abilities. When Paul is a teenager, he dreams about a desert planet. Lady Jessica comes to him just before dawn and informs him that he must meet with the head of the Bene Gesserit, the Reverend Mother Moyam. Paul is taken into a room where the Reverend Mother holds a poison needle called the Gom Jabbar to his neck and instructs him to place his hand in a mysterious box. She believes that Paul may be the Kwisatz Haderach, a messianic figure who is destined to bring enormous change to the universe. To test Paul's abilities, the box inflicts an intolerable pain on whoever's hand is inside. If Paul flinches, the Gom Jabbar will kill him instantly. Paul passes the test as his mother did many years before. The two sisters of the Bene Gesserit reveal that a terrible event will bring about the end of House Atreides, resulting in the death of Duke Leto. This terrible event will take place on the desert planet Arrakis, also known as Dune, and will likely involve the Atreides' mortal enemies, House Harkonnen, who have controlled Arrakis for the past 80 years. Chapter 2 Summary. On Geti Prime, Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, head of House Harkonnen, meets with his visor, Piter DeVries, and his teenage nephew, Fade Rautha. The Baron discusses his hatred for House Atreides. He plans to use a transfer of power of the Praetorian Arrakis to bring down his enemy, Duke Leto. In response to to fade Ralph's impatience and boredom. The Baron points to Piter's slow and careful cunning, even if Piter is a violent psychopath. Piter is a mentat, political advisors who are quote-unquote trained in conditions until their brain functions almost like supercomputers, which were banned after an event known as the Butlerian Jihad. Piter is also addicted to melange, a hallucinogenic substance that is found only on Arrakis. Also known as the quote-unquote spice, melange is the most valuable commodity in the human universe because it is necessary for space travel. When consumed by humans, the spice turns their eyes blue and can grant them prophetic powers. The Baron predicts that Duke Leto will make Arrakeen his capital city on Arrakis. Then the Harkonnens will try to kill Paul. After that, their secret double agent and House Atreides will betray Leto, lower the shields, and allow the Harkonnen forces to kill all the Atreides' armies. The Baron has forced Paul's tutor, Dr. Wellington Yue, to betray House Atreides by capturing and torturing Yue's wife. The Baron has also allied with the Emperor, who will send elite Sardaukar warriors to help crush House Atreides, thereby preventing House Atreides from becoming nearly as powerful as the Emperor. The Baron and Piter are satisfied that they have thought of everything. Once their plan succeeds, they will control the incredibly lucrative spice trade in the galaxy. Thrilled by the thought of Leto's downfall, the Baron gorges himself on food to celebrate. Chapter 3 Summary. The Reverend Mother and Lady Jessica discuss Paul. As a member of the Bene Gesserit, Jessica was told that she must have a daughter rather than a son. She chose to have a son because she loves Duke Leto, even though he will not make her his wife, and because she, quote-unquote, sensed the possibility that she could produce the Kwisatz Haderach. Jessica believes that she can protect Paul, though the Reverend Mother is not so sure. She tells Paul to join them and describes his strange prophetic dreams about a girl on Arrakis. When Paul asks about his family's fate, the Reverend Mother says that her order has done what it can for Paul and Jessica, but the Duke is doomed. She tells Jessica to improve Paul's training in the voice, a vocal technique that compels people to obey the speaker's orders. Reverend Mother leaves, hiding the tears in her eyes. Chapter 4 Summary. Polymath the Fur Hawat, the mentat for the Atreides family, discusses House Atreides' imminent departure for Arrakis. Hawat warns Paul about the hostile conditions on the desert planet and explains the history of the local people, the Fremen. The Fremen have learned to subsist in the arid desert by using special still suits that recycle the body's water. The Fremen's eyes are blue due to their proximity to the spice. Hawat admits that the Duke knows that going to Arrakis is a trap because, quote-unquote, the Emperor ordered it. Nevertheless, the Duke still plans to go. After Hawat departs, the Duke's military officer, Gurney Halleck, enters for Paul's regular sparring lesson. Gurney insists on sparring, even though Paul is tired, because Paul may need to fight in an unexpected moment. They use blades and shields. Privately, Gurney laments the loss of Paul's childhood and innocence. Chapter 5 Summary. After Paul's sparring session, he meets with Dr. Yue. They discuss Arrakis, the Fremen, and the giant sandworms that live on the planet and produce the invaluable spice. Throughout their conversation, Yue knows that he will betray the Atreides family. He gives Paul a book, but when Paul reads a passage, Yue is reminded of his wife, who has been kidnapped and tortured by the Harkonnens. Chapter 6 Summary. Duke Leto visits his son to talk about their immediate departure to Arrakis. He explains how House Atreides can benefit politically and financially from control of the planet. When Paul shares his concerns about the Harkonnens, Leto assures his son that he's aware that the Harkonnens and the Emperor are conspiring against him. He plans to use the Fremen as quote-unquote strong and deadly allies against the betrayal. He warns Paul to be ready for action, tells him to continue his training as a warrior, a Bene Gesserit, and a mentat. Chapter 7 Summary. House Atreides moves to Arrakis. Lady Jessica oversees the move, issuing orders on where things are to be placed. Leto interrupts her to discuss the new staff, including the head housekeeper, a Fremen woman named the Shadowed Mapes. Jessica meets with Mapes, correctly discerning that Mapes is carrying a hidden weapon. The weapon is a Fremen kris knife, a weapon made from the tooth of a sandworm. Once a Fremen draws a kris knife, it cannot be sheathed unless it is drawn blood. Mapes explains that the weapon is a ceremonial gift for Jessica, who she believes is part of an ancient Fremen prophecy. Jessica accepts the gift and cuts Mapes slightly to satisfy the custom, though she knows that the prophecy, like many others, was deliberately planted centuries ago by the Bene Gesserit. She accepts Mapes into the household. And now, for my thoughts on this section of the book. Anyway, speaking of suspense, The Gom Jabbar. It's a sadistic test of what it means to be human. Make clicking pictures of stoplights almost bearable, right? I hear people complain about that all the time. Why do I have to tell a robot that I'm a human by clicking pictures of stoplights? At least you don't have to stick your hand in some box that promises only quote-unquote pain, and if you flinch, they stab you with a poison needle. Like, okay, I'll click some pictures. Anyway, all of this is suddenly relevant again with this sociopathic push for AI. I mean, none of this ever ends well, especially this AI thing. I started off, I was into AI. Then I started to hear from some artists who said that artificial intelligence is simply stealing their work to create new, quote unquote, not even really, but new products and pictures and just what is now, it just ends up being slop over and over again. So I'm not really into AI anymore. And now I'm starting to see behind the curtain a little bit and see that the only reason that they're pushing it is because they convinced some gullible rich people to invest billions of dollars in this stupid thing that just is never going to get the return on investment that they promised. And now they're panicking and trying to shove this into every aspect of our lives, whether we want it or not. So please, I guess I'm saying, for the love of God, do not build the Torment Nexus. How many times do we have to go through this with you guys? Palantir is not a good thing. Something named BlackRock cannot possibly be a good thing. Oh well. Anyway. But fine. We're here. We could spend decades discussing what makes for human and human intelligence. So I kind of agree with the Bene Gesserit. Stick your hand in a box and experience pain. That'll prove that you're human. My former thoughts. Maybe I'm a hypocrite, because you might know me as the kind of person who is not generally for violence or this sort of extreme behavior, but seems like extreme measures for extreme circumstances. I just heard the ministry song as I was working out. Actually, I think I heard it at Walmart yesterday, which was kind of funny. Called Goddamn White Trash. And I listened to it over and over again in Walmart, which was kind of funny. But we need that kind of energy for clankers as well, because this can't be allowed to go on for much longer. Otherwise, we could all end up dead, or poor, or both. I mean, if this is a game of chess, this part represents the opener, positioning both sides to spring that eventual trap that we talked about earlier. Paul, the main character, the guy who had to stick his hand in the box, he survives the trap. This drives most of the rest of this part of the story. Paul's family, the Atreides, want the power. The Harkonnens want the power. Just another story of two groups of rich assholes fighting to get richer. How has nothing changed since this book was written? I think that a lot. Like, how do we still deal with the same crap over and over again where we have to remind the rich people that if enough of us get together, and if enough of us get mad enough, then they start losing body parts, namely their heads. Not that I'm advocating for it, or as I say online, we need to start burning shit down. Metaphorically, of course, in case the NSA or whoever is out there listening. Anyway, who are these rich assholes? There's the Atreides, the heroes, the protagonists, the least horrible option. Any of these? None of these? At the very least, we get the fish out of water narrative that might prove interesting. The Harkonnens. Baron and his idiot nephew. Maybe that's harsh, and I'm just drawing too much of a comparison to the Trumps. But this scene just gives away the game. It also fills in a little bit more lore. Piter, the Baron's whipping boy, actively gives him an edge. Fills in the gaps in the Baron's strategy that he maybe isn't thinking about, or he thinks that he's too smart to even consider because it won't happen because he's so smart. I mean, every dictator needs his Goebbels, or Stephen Miller, I suppose. What about spice? Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. No, never mind. Not that kind of spice. Growing up, I heard the saying. More recently, I saw the memes. Spice, the most powerful and limited resource, is the reason for the silly family feud between these groups of rich assholes. The Atreides have their heir. They have Paul. They have the one who can go deliver them the spice. and allow these rich assholes to get even richer. The Baron wants to shore up his power and authority before handing the empire over to his nephew. He wants this as well because, again, he's a rich asshole, and rich assholes are never rich enough. They always want more. Through it all, the spice must flow. All roads lead to Arrakis. I guess pick your tagline here. The author also throws in Mentats, the Bene Gesserit, which I already mentioned. Like, we're supposed to know what he's talking about. Several times I had to go to Google or Super Summary or just type something into the search bar and figure out what the heck they were talking about and what it meant for the book and the plot and everything. I'm still not 100% there. I heard that this book was dense and complex, and most of it is because he just throws these things out there and expects you to know what he's talking about, or he wants you to feel on edge so that you have that in common with Paul and everything that he's going through. Maybe that's what it's all about. I mean, whatever. All these things add the mystery and almost a sense of magic to anything. I mean, what's the old saying about sufficiently advanced technology and magic? Well, all these technologies seem like they are going to drive the narrative in some form or fashion. This part of the book, which ends with chapter 7, ends with more intrigue. There's a Chris knife again. What the heck is a Chris knife? I guess it's a knife made from a sandworm tooth. What the heck is a sandworm? I mean, I've already seen the movie, so I know, but if you don't know, then you don't know what the heck is going on here. The prophecy is planted by the Bene Gesserit. I mean, what does this all mean for the story and the characters? Chekhov's gun tells us it's got to be something. It's got to be big. It's got to come back later on, right? And that's where we end, with everything completely up in the air and quite the cliffhanger to hold on to. Hopefully, I don't give you another one of those lengthy breaks in between, and we can actually talk about where this cliffhanger leads in about a week. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us if you haven't already at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I wrote a couple of articles about games that I consider a gift this year. We also have this podcast is the only one currently active. On the page, there's a link to our socials, our YouTube, which I was trying to be more active, but that just kind of fell apart. I'm going to try to record some things over Christmas break that will allow me to get back into the habit. Our TikTok at noobdad76 is pretty active with different things, gaming, crochet, Lego, all that sort of stuff. It's been a little holiday heavy lately, but that's to be expected. As I mentioned, I'll be back in about a week with the next episode, and we can see where this is all going to take us. Thanks for listening. Talk to you then. Bye, guys.